Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. We're excited to have a conversation with someone who's had their finger on the pulse of the country for a long time in both the work they did in politics and outside of politics, because in many respects, you just can't write some of the political crazy that we've seen in the past number of years, from Trump hiding classified documents, near his toilet, to Ron DeSantis saying Black people benefited from slavery. It doesn't get any more stupid than that. And yet it feels like we're living it through one of the worst sketch shows ever written. My guest today is someone who's familiar with that process and very familiar with the intersection of both politics and comedy, and has shared his talents both on television and in the United States Senate. Al Franken is a former SNL writer, an Emmy Award-winning comedian, best-selling author, and the former senator from the great state of Minnesota. He is the host of the Al Franken podcast, which, hint, hint, I'm going to try to see if I can grab a seat on. And I'm looking forward to my conversation with Al about all things crazy in American politics, coming up next on the Michael Steele podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. This is going to be a good one today. This guy, I used to battle against him at one point, and just because he was just a common sense Democrat. I had to find a flaw somewhere when I was RNC chairman and Al Franken was doing his thing in the Senate. It's real, real treat to have you here as part of the conversation today, Al. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having me, Michael. It's a treat to be with you.
Yes. It's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of good stuff going on.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if it's a lot of fun.
That's
fair. I assume it will be.
I think it will be. I think there will be some things that we may agree on. Or some people we certainly will agree about. I'm looking at stuff that's going on right now as we get set up. You've got the second Republican debate coming up in about a week. You've got, Ron DeSantis and Trump and all of these players who really are just tripling down on the worst in us and saying that's really what we should be striving towards, the things that make us angry, that pisses us off.
We
want to be frustrated by other people's purposes.
That's Trump, and that's the Republican Party since Trump. It just went in that has always been there, but they went into hyper speed.
They did. And so what does that say to you? Having gotten caught up in some of the cultural bullshit and witnessing it in a way that why and how has that become such a driver as opposed to look, we've had these cultural periods in our life, in our country's history, for sure, where you go back to the 60s and the Love Generation and, the sexual revolution and all these other things that happened. But the damn country didn't fall apart. I mean, we weren't out there, burning books and screaming at people. What is about this cultural moment that just brings out the absolute worst in people in terms of how they see their fellow men and women?
Well, again, I think Trump accelerated everything. And A key moment was when Kellyanne Conway came out and said there are alternative facts.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the second day or third day of his administration, because Spicer had lied about the size of the inaugural crowd.
Right.
And the excuse for, we had never had alternative facts before. It was a shock to hear that phrase, right? And then it turned out that that's kind of stuck as legitimate. And the reasoning for alternative facts, you're entitled to your alternative opinion, but not your alternative facts.
Right.
But because of, quote, fake news, suddenly fake news is putting out, according to them, fake facts. And so if you have fake facts, then you need alternative facts.
Right.
And it became very clear that that's how they were going to play it. And that, when you can't have democracy when you can't agree on what just happened yesterday. And I think that sent us into a spiral of just, and it's Trump. It's Trump's whole thing. The Washington Post kept track of the alternative facts that
right.
they put out, and it was 30,000. It was like it came out to 20 a day or something. Yeah. They accelerated. And now nothing he says is anything but not a lie.
Right. And yet,
I think when the truth is not, there is no truth. That's the problem, is that you can't have a discussion about what's real, and if you can't agree on what happened yesterday or what happened last week, or everything falls into chaos.
I guess
that's where we are. We have the Republican National Committee calling January 6th legitimate political discourse.
Right. And I think for me, I just find it interesting to see that you have this push and this drive towards these alternative narratives, that people in their right mind, and maybe they're not in their right mind, maybe that's the truth, that people are just stupid now.
Well, there's all kinds of not in the right mind. They're stupid, crazy.
Right.
If 70% of Republicans who say they're voting in the primaries say they believe that Trump won the election, we've got a real problem. That seems to be an accurate number, right?
Right. No, but here's the rub. Here's the rub, Al. That's all true. And you've got these Republicans who are largely locked and loaded on that. But then you look at the other side of the coin and you go, well, why the hell can't the Democrats cut through? I mean, if you're just talking about Republicans, then Donald Trump and Joe Biden are not tied in national polling. If you're just talking about Republicans, then among Democrats, you don't have 70% of Democrats wanting someone else at the top of the ticket. So I don't see any relief coming from the Democrats to help deal with the bullshit coming from Republicans, because they're stirring up their own bullshit on their side. I mean, I've had more conversations where I'm trying to talk Democrats off the ledge of jumping away from Joe Biden. I'm like, motherfucker, where are you going to go? Who are you going to go to?
This is the bedwetting aspect of the Democratic Party right now.
So we're sitting here, we're looking at this environment. I'm saying, this is all getting set up to put this asshole back in the White House in 24.
Well, there's no question that both men, and we had a close election in terms of electoral college, not in terms of popular vote.
Right.
But both men are diminished in different ways. It's a legitimate issue to say, should an 80-year-old guy be running for a second term? And So people can debate that, but I agree with you. I don't see any alternative right now. And also, but there is part of this to me is, again, the fake news, which I will have to say Fox is, I mean, they paid $700 million for being fake news, but that doesn't stop them from taking, I saw, you know, an analysis of something they did on Fox where it was a state visit and Biden gets off the plane and he gets off the red carpet and he goes to the side and they're explaining how they're setting up the protocol of the actual greeting of the hymn.
Right.
And so he's a little bit to the side on the red carpet, on this big wide carpet. And he goes like, okay, so where am I supposed to go? And which is what you ask when you want to know where you're supposed to go,
right?
Okay, whether you're 80 or whether you're 78 or whether you're 25, you go like, okay, where am I supposed to go? And they go, yeah, you'll go there. And it goes, okay, and then he goes there. But of course, Fox runs, where am I supposed to go? And that's what they do. So part of that is running that over and over and over again, those kinds of things, choosing those kind of moments. This is fake news.
But here's
editing.
My point.
Fake news by editing.
Yeah.
I think that, again, age is a legitimate issue, but the caricature of him that has been painted by social media, right, and other is just deliberately inaccurate. It's part of lying. As I call it lying. You can call it fake news. You can call it whatever, alternative facts, whatever it is. But I just read Frank Foer's book, The Last Politician.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, you see that Biden is Biden. He's the Biden from... you know, what it takes from,
right.
He is a kind of hands-on, peripatetic,
yep,
a guy who's in, you know, there's a scene, there's just a scene in the book where he's like really desperately finding out what's going on with a plane that has baby formula in Europe. Is it taking off? You know, I mean,
right.
He is hands-on and is not the caricature that's painted by fake news,
but
and
I think,
by you know, where people get some of their social media.
Yeah, you know, and I think to the point you're making, I think part of the frustration for a lot.
I can't believe I'm saying fake news all the time because their phrase and
well, but Alice, it's a real part of our political life and certainly our social culture that it drives these storylines. And the thing that I find interesting is that the Republicans say it and the Democrats fear it. So this, yep, the narratives about Joe Biden's age is crap that's pushed out by Republicans. But instead of fighting up against it, the Democrats appear to collapse under the weight of it. And I think it's not just on the age thing, it's on any number of other things that I find it very interesting, particularly when you look at the success of this administration. Unprecedented success given the odds stacked against him in the Senate and the House at various points in time over his 3 years now in office, that he's able to negotiate with a rogue element of the Republican Party and hold in line a rogue element within his own party, Joe Manchin et al., to pull together an enormous number of wins around the economy, around infrastructure, global politics, Ukraine. And yet and still, he suffers from a poor narrative. And I'm just saying, what is it? what is it that's happening in space that people will look at that and go, yeah, but, and instead of,
because they go, yeah, but inflation.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, there's explanations for some of this, for some of your questions. And one of which is that we had inflation at 9% for quite a while there.
Right.
And that hadn't happened really since, you know, the late 70s. And you don't forget that right away. You don't go like, oh, it's 4 now. That sticks in your bones when gas was as high as it was. I love that Trump likes to say, like, when I was president, gas was $2.30 a gallon. Well, yeah, during COVID and when no one could drive, no one went to work, no businesses were operating. And not that that was necessarily his fault, although his COVID response was horrible in so many different ways. But I would love for him to bring that up in the debate. And I would love to have Biden go like, well, yeah. And it was very, very low at the beginning of the Great Recession because we had this Great Recession. That's the nature of the price of gas. And it's gone down. Now it's going up a little bit. All these pressures, are part of this as well.
Right.
You know, and so it isn't just his age. Also, I mean, if you look at these victories, infrastructure, I don't know, you know, when I remember in the State of the Union speech, he said, I'll see you. And he pointed some of the Republicans. I'll see you at the groundbreakings.
Yeah.
And I remember, during the inflation, I get my recoveries during the Great Recession when we passed, they passed an infra. I wasn't there yet. I got there late.
Mm-hmm.
You guys tried to keep me out.
Yeah, we tried to keep you out. All right.
Yeah, good job. Anyway, so they passed this, infrastructure bill, which wasn't big enough, really. It was about $787 billion. It should have been higher. And that, and that's kind of why we had the rescue plan was so big, was that Biden remembered that wasn't big enough.
Right.
But I remember going to a groundbreaking and a Republican in my, in my state went to a groundbreaking, with a shovel and you've been to him. And I remember, so we each got to speak and Amy was there, Amy Klobuchar, and I was there and Amy spoke and I spoke and I said, well, I got there here too late to vote for this. So we should only give credit to the members of Congress who voted for this. So that would be Amy. And I turned to the Republican and I went, well, just Amy.
Just Amy.
Because I wanted to point that out. But we were talking about why he doesn't get credit. Just think about the CHIPS Act.
Right.
CHIPS Act is a great thing.
Yeah.
It's going to increase our competitiveness. And it's they tout manufacturing in the Biden administration as well they should, but most manufacturing jobs are now done by robots, and and so I think that sometimes the administration itself overestimates the effect of a success like that,
mm-hmm.
because Americans aren't going like, oh, good, I can go back to my blue collar, job, which we all look back as that's when you could get, a cabin by a lake.
Right.
Because you got $30-some an hour and you're a blue collar worker. Those jobs are, a lot of those have gone to automation. And that's not what Americans are going yay for, as much as I think Catherine Rampell wrote a really good piece about that in the Washington Post. So yeah, it's going to be a close election.
It's going to be close, and it exposes. I mean, you touch on some of the elements of the underlying energy around how voters respond in election cycles.
Thank you for pointing that out.
No,
I really appreciate that.
I just thought I'd help buffer the.
No, that's how you do a podcast. I host a podcast too, and that's what you do. You just tell the audience what your guest just said. You go along the conversation and you reframe it, or you.
I told you.
I don't want to tell you how to.
Look, I told you it's going to be different people. I told you this brother's going to bring it. No, but the point is, what you're saying really speaks to some of the energy beneath the surface that is not talked about or not readily understood in how people are going to be looking at the arguments pro and con going into this election cycle, which is the broader point I was trying to make, is for Democrats, that works in your favor. So have that conversation. But when you allow someone to come in and smear crap all over the argument before you make it,
right,
that becomes a harder thing to do. And the only thing, no matter how you then try to clean it up, you still have the smell.
Well, you have
that,
people.
That's what reminds you, is like, yeah, but inflation. Yeah, the economy's doing better, but gas prices, inflation. I mean, people are complaining about inflation at 3.5% when it was 10% a year ago.
But they remember the shock in their system. They still remember that. And we got a ways to go. Where was Reagan at this point in 83?
47, 48%, something like that.
And he took 50, you know, he took 49 states.
He took all but two states, yeah.
Well, he took all but one state.
One state, District of Columbia. Yeah. Right, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, things change. You know, Reagan.
That's going to be a lot of change. That's going to be a lot of change in this environment.
Well,
for Joe Biden to walk away with all but one state.
Yes, well, that's not going to happen, but I mean, there's going to be a lot of change between now and your convention, or I don't know. What's your status now? Are you still a Republican?
I'm still a Republican, and I'm a Republican because fundamentally, I have argued the Lincoln cause from the very beginning of my journey in this party. That goes back to 1976. So
you're
all
against
this
slavery,
shit is going.
I know that.
Huh?
You're against slavery.
I'm totally against slavery, and I don't think it was a really good jobs program, so yeah.
Well, you know what, I think about this, the blacksmith thing, the number one job that was people transitioned who were enslaved, mm-hmm. and it wasn't a blacksmith. The number one job in transition was picking cotton.
Yes, because that's what they did.
That was the thing they
that's what they did. When,
that was the transition. It was he
didn't go from picking cotton to you know, crop. Mining a shoe.
Getting ripped off, you know.
Oh my God.
After Reconstruction was over.
So let me ask you about the Senate, that your playground for a while. Mitt Romney has come out and has decided that I'm done with this. I can't do this bullshit anymore. I'm done. But on his way out, has pretty much salted the earth, or at least scorched it pretty damn good for Republicans in terms of what he sees happening inside the Senate. That really kind of speaks to something that a number of us have been warning about for a while, and that is the House is the leading edge of what's going to eventually wind up being part of the Senate as well. And that is this disintegration of norms and the institutional prerogatives, et cetera, for just crass politics. And he pretty much labeled that. You also have spoken to some of, again, going back to some of the cultural issues that sort of buffeted you at the time, about what was happening in some of these institutions. What's your take on what Mitt Romney said this week and how people are kind of responding to it?
Well, some of this goes back to even before Trump and McConnell. First of all, McConnell made it clear that his goal was to make Obama a one-term president. And right. He said that to his caucus while we were in the throes of the worst recession since the Great Depression. That's not really what you should be talking about to your caucus. What you should be talking about is getting people back in their homes and that kind of thing. And, Republicans, when I got there, I was the, quote, 60th, but Ted Kennedy was sick and right. couldn't be there. So they filibustered everything. And there were as many filibusters of executive appointees during Obama's administration, and this is Mitch, as it were in the whole previous history of the country. And then, of course, Merrick Garland not taking him up. Right now we have a Supreme Court that is legislating. And that's the broken system that we have. And you'll remember that was like, you can't have a new Supreme Court justice confirmed during a presidential year. It's as simple as that. And the fact of the matter is we had done that before. Anthony Kennedy came in during a presidential year. And this was just a big lie. It was a big lie. And then what told the lie was Coney Barrett being sworn in 8 days before the election.
Right.
And so I was on Judiciary Committee. I was not a lawyer, but I played one in a sketch. In those meetings, I just read from Biden's speech, because remember, it was the Biden rule.
Right. That's right.
It wasn't anything like what he said it was. Biden had been chairman of the Judiciary Committee. I think this was 88. And in June, after the session had, of the Supreme Court had ended, he said that the president has to consult with us if someone's going to resign and replace him. That's all he said. And if you appoint him a moderate, we'll take him up and confirm him, And McConnell completely mischaracterized what Biden said, deliberately, knowingly. And I would read that speech from Biden, and they didn't care. No one cared. No one cared what actually Biden had said. No one cared about the truth. And it was a political move. And that was awful. And right now we have Dobbs because of that. I mean, that's the majority of the Supreme Court right there.
Yep.
And this goes back to Citizens United and Shelby County. Yep. Citizens United was changed everything. And to me, Roberts is a villain in all of this. I think Roberts plays it as a very, very savvy political actor, but he, he's a huge partisan. And so I think part of what's going on right now is the Supreme Court is acting as the legislative body, and with the especially with the divided Congress, that's what's going on. And it has to do with what the EPA can do. And, you know, on
you look at what Tuberville is doing with military appointments. You look at what, you know, the overall process around getting other, you know, government officials appointed in place. That appointment process has always kind of been a politically fraught thing, but it seems a lot different today because it's
use of the hold,
right?
And I've seen previous abuses of holds, but this is ridiculous. I mean, this is like over 300 members of the military, and that hurts our military families. Obviously, it hurts our readiness. This is, I've been looking through some of the 30,000 alternative facts, and I found my favorite one that Trump came up with, which is he said this at a press conference about a year and a half after he was sworn in, but he said that when he was sworn in, this was a press conference he did with the ambassador of Italy at the White House, the prime minister of Italy. And he said that the day he took office, the military, our armed forces had no ammunition. Do you remember this?
Yeah, I do. Yes.
And
we had no ammunition.
Detail.
not a bullet anywhere.
No torpedoes, no bombs, no missiles, no hand grenades. And
all those nuclear silos were empty.
He quotes this general. He said it was one of the top generals, if not the top general, came up to
him. I just made him the top general.
I love the fact that he's commander in chief and he's not quite sure what the chairman of the Joint Chiefs is. But this guy goes, "I'm sorry, sir. I apologize. We have no ammunition." And he goes into a great, they had no ammunition. And he said, "I'll never let this happen to another president."
Exactly. Because.
And what's great about it is we have 500,000 men and women in our military, and clearly not one of them let it out. I mean, they must have talked.
Sarge, I got no bullets. What am I?
Tell your wife, your husband, don't tell your kids, don't tell your minister, for God's sake. Can't let this out. We'll be sitting.
You're out there training going, bang, bang.
Yeah. So.
Oh, my goodness.
I got off on a tangent there. But when I still go back to this fake news and how this has just made it impossible to do democracy. And we can't agree on anything. And part of it is the balance in the House and the balance in the Senate is so close that we just can't. And I don't know the extent to which I've seen holes before, and holes take up time to break.
They do. And I think that's kind of what Romney was talking about, was this infestation of fake news, which or cultural biases, or however you want to frame it, that are animating everything we do.
The fear that engenders in the members.
Right.
Of going against their base. So he talks about votes and the impeachment and that kind of thing, and people saying, "Well, I want to keep my job.
I want to keep it." Well, dude, I mean, this is public service. I mean, you mean to tell me there's nothing else in your life you want to do besides this? I mean, and why are you here for 60 years? I mean, it just when this whole thing became a job as opposed to service, that was for me a huge shift in the body politic, when people figured out how to grift enough cash, right? I mean, I look at some state legislators here in Maryland at a time. I look at national legislators and I go, well, how's your net worth if this is the only thing you've ever done and your wife is a school teacher? How the hell are you sitting living in a $1 million home? Or how do you have, how's your net worth in excess of $5 million if that's all you've ever done? You've never held a public sector job making $500,000 or $1 million a year. You've held a job that the top of it, which today is $178,000. It wasn't that when you started.
You know, there's spouses that are lobbyists and there are kids that are lobbyists. And so,
and I think the Supreme Court scandal has exposed some of that. When you look at the wife of Jenny, you look at Jenny Thomas, the wife of Clarence Thomas, and all the side funneling of cash and other perks into the family nest.
There's that. And there's also, you know, Robert's wife who, makes a lot of money sort of recruiting for law firms that have a lot of business before. I mean, a lot of these things, they're gradations of this.
Right.
Certainly the corruption from Clarence Thomas and from Alito now, that's really ugly. That's
right.
That's corrupt.
And for some reason it seems to be
before the court,
right? Well, but Al, for some reason it seems to be hard to make that case. People don't give a shit. They're sitting there going, oh, I don't see what the problem is. You don't, you don't see the problem here, and the fact that we can narratively just gloss by it as if it's unimportant and not think that at some point it is going to further corrode the trust of the American people in the judicial process, which quite honestly is the last thing standing for us. It doesn't bode well. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with the Al Franken right after this.
Hey there, this is Lee McGowan, but most people call me Politics Girl. You might know me from my award-winning rants, where I break down major political issues from my kitchen. But I'm also the host of the Politics Girl podcast. Each week, we discuss key issues that are affecting America and its people. We don't do the news, we do the big picture, what it means and why you should care. We break down complicated issues conversationally, so you can understand what's going on and be able to speak to it. Ultimately, the goal is to have you leaving the podcast feeling smarter than you came in. Listen to the Politics Girl podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get your pods. I know your time is limited, so if you spend it with me, I'll make sure it's worth it. Politics Girl podcast. New episodes drop every Tuesday.
Welcome back, everybody, to Michael Steele podcast. Having great conversations with my buddy Al Franken.
A great commercial, by the way.
Thank you. It was pretty good.
Enjoyed that. People really should listen to the commercials during the podcast. I know that most entertaining parts of my podcast
are the commercials.
Voice myself.
Folks, the magic of podcasts. So, Senator, let me ask you this. This week, we got to watch a member of Congress go to the theater with her boyfriend. And during the course of the performance, had their own performance of vaping, groping, and pummeling
I read about this and wasn't that interested, but I missed the pummeling.
Well, when she was grabbing her boyfriend's crotch.
Oh, okay. That's pummeling?
Yeah. Remember the match slap story? where he was being driven, and he reached across to the young man who was driving him and started pummeling his junk?
Nope.
Oh, don't tell me you missed that one, baby.
I missed the
head of CPAC. The head of CPAC is now facing these allegations and lawsuits and all the other joys that come with pummeling a 30-something-year-old married man while who's driving you around.
Okay.
This is the modern GOP. People are missing
enough.
They're missing our angle here now. While we rail against transgenderism in the gay community, and we rail against the bad behavior of Democrats, we secretly and privately really love it, because between Congressman Cawthorn and his drag outfit in his wheelchair, and Matt Slaps pummeling a young man's junk, and now Lauren Boebert not only allowing her boyfriend to grab her rather forcefully in her breasties, but then reaching down and having some fun herself. This is the modern GOP.
Well, that's unfortunate public behavior. You don't do that in a theater. I've taught my children that. Now they're now parents. I'm a grandfather, and
so you're hoping they're sharing those lessons.
The same thing, although I think they're in pretty good hands with their parents,
right?
To do that,
what are we to make of this? I mean, it's just kind of you talk about just being unfit for the job because of all the other crap that we know and see, but then you layer on this sort of social behavior. And here's the kicker. She then comes out and finally goes, well, the one lesson I learned was, we called it off. We're no longer dating. So she allows this man to have all this fun with her on the first date. Okay. But then she says, nevertheless, what was that?
That was the first date?
That was the first date. That was
okay.
That was the first date.
Okay. All right. First date.
First date.
That could be used against her in her next race.
Just a little bit. But then her takeaway lesson, Al, was, I know now not to date Democrats, because it turns out the man she was dating, not only did he run a nightclub that had gay-friendly evenings, so they would have gay programs during the course of the week, but he was a Democrat. So her takeaway was, I'm no longer dating Democrats.
How did this date get set up? Now I'm intrigued. I don't. This Tinder, or I mean, what is this?
I don't know. I don't. He's a local businessman who does quite well, and she apparently fancied him enough to allow him to do the things he did in public, sitting on the aisle. He had the aisle seat.
Okay. Well, enough of this.
Yes. So, but I think
my podcast, what I tend to do is discuss public policy.
Well, that's a public policy point.
It is.
It's a public policy
It's a little tangential, but
Well, we cover all things that relate back to why we're in such a shitter right now, because all of this feeds into the same narratives.
It's into why we're in the shitter.
Yeah, it's all feeds into the same narratives. Not just the public policy, it is the behavior of our elected officials that seemingly they are unrepentant for, and the public really doesn't care to exact a price for, because
probably her first blemish. Didn't she accuse my congresswoman of being a terrorist.
Yes. But so you have all these things. So I guess sort of pulling back from moments like that, what are your thoughts on how comedy today is a way of sort of not just making fun of these sort of political moments or making fun of politics generally, but actually, sort of getting people to see it for what it really is? Because when you can look at it and laugh at it, then you really begin to sort of, it sort of takes away that initial reactive tribal response. Well, I've got to protect, I got to be against this because I'm a Republican, or I got to be against this because I'm a Democrat. But when you find yourself laughing at it and you realize, oh man, this shit's funny. And not only is it funny, it's stupid. So you begin that process. Do you see that? I mean, when you look at the stuff, for example, Lincoln Project does, that is incisive, it cuts through, but you're laughing at the joke, right, in front of you, as much as you're taking in just the sheer craziness of it or why it's messed up, et cetera. You did some of that in your own comedy back in the day. George Carlin would use comedy to expose the political hypocrisies and to get the public to laugh at the thing they would otherwise, because of their politics, maybe be defensive of.
Satire has its place. I'm not sure that in the mix of all the noise and all the disinformation and all the social media that it had the prominence that it did when we had more people were watching the same stuff,
right,
all the time. And we didn't have Fox, we didn't have MSNBC, which are different. I'm not equating them at all, but you have people in their camps, and I think it's harder to break through with satire these days.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln Project, I don't know what their effect was on the election. I know that my side, laughed and rooted. And I'm not sure how much. Again, I go back to that 70% of Republicans who say they're voting in the primaries,
right,
think that Trump won the election. I don't know if there's a joke that could convince them otherwise.
Right.
I could think of the perfect joke that have the 7% go, you know what? That's right.
That's right.
I laughed.
I get it now.
And it made me realize that my guy is a narcissistic psychopath. Wow, that was a powerful joke.
But look, if anyone can do it, Al, it's you.
I'm trying to. I'll make a note to write that joke right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, you should write that joke.
Write a joke that will change everything.
So before I let you go, speaking of writers, what's your take on the latest developments inside the writer and actor strikes out in Hollywood? Do you have Bill Maher and other talk show hosts sort of backing away from starting up production again because
They got pushback, and they got pushback hard.
Yeah.
And that's, that's what happened. And I don't know why. Look, these hosts, many of them are paying their staff and their whole staff and paying them while this happens, and longer it goes on, this is out of their money, out of their personal money. And they're going to, at a certain point, they're going to say, I think I should probably run for Congress so I can make some real money.
And you get a black car with it, so it's good.
One of the first, when I was on in Senate and on Judiciary, one of the first hearings I had was NBC, NBC Comcast wanted to buy Universal.
Right.
And I was, I think, the only one on the committee who said, no, I'm against this. And what we're seeing right now, the power of the studios and the and the producers has they become so powerful by these mergers. And this was very, very, I said at the time, it was very dangerous. I remember I was sitting next to Arlen Specter, who was a, had become a Democrat and lost his seniority. So he was next to me.
Right.
So really, it wasn't, he wasn't happy about it. And I, you know, he's from Philadelphia, right? And Philadelphia is where Comcast is. Mm-hmm. So he was going to be for that. And Casey was going to be for that. And I fought this the whole time I was there. I fought Comcast trying to buy Time Warner Cable, and I won that one. But when these companies have this much power, it's not like it used to be when there was a Writers Guild strike or a SAG after strike. And I belong to all those the unions. And this is hurting a tremendous amount of people. And I was talking to Sarah Silverman the other day, and she was telling me about some of her, she knows Seth Meyers, she knows mm-hmm. a number of those who are paying their people. And, but she's saying, meanwhile, the heads of those companies are at billionaires camp. And this is really, this is a result of the conglomeratization of media.
Yeah, clearly the squeeze is there, and now when you layer on top of that this new frontier of streaming and AI, you really begin to get a sense of what the writers and the actors are legitimately concerned about. If I can take your image, Al, and I can repurpose it through AI to have you
doing this. They've been doing like background actors and
right.
you know, who they pay for a day and taking what they do, and they can put them in the background of other things. And this has been, you know, AI, we hadn't really paid attention to till a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, you know, there's a lot of great promise with AI, but there's also a lot of great danger.
Right, right. And I think I've been doing a number of programs recently with respect to the dangers of AI in the political space, because I think that's where you're going to see the abuse first. We already have. To the extent you look at it as abuse, when you don't disclose, as the RNC didn't, that the thing you're watching was created through AI. It is not an actual event that occurred.
I've seen something where it made Marjorie Taylor Greene look stupid. Oh, wait a minute. No, that was...
yes.
Correct me. I'm sorry.
I thought that was a live action short, but I could be.
It was live. It was live.
Al Franken, he's one of the good guys, y'all. I really appreciate Al, and you're taking time, man, to come on and just have a little bit of conversation with us around some fun stuff and to bring your insights and your humor.
Some fun stuff.
That's right.
Breakdown of American democracy.
That's right. Fun stuff. What's what we do, right? On a Tuesday. It's what we do. Al Franken, he's a former SNL cast member, writer, Emmy
Award cast member.
What?
Cast member. Featured player. Mainly I wrote on the show. I wrote on the show for 15 seasons, and 95% of what I did was write.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Tom Davis and I went to high school together. We're two writers. We wrote Julia Child Bleeding to Death. Remember that?
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
and wrote a lot of the political stuff with other people, of course. But a lot of the stuff I did was the political satire on the show, which very proud of during those seasons.
Well, we appreciate the part of that legacy, but I, you know, guys in my space, we appreciate your time trying to work Washington, and so you know, it you ever think about doing it again?
I think about it.
Yeah. You think about it about the same way I think about growing hair. So yeah, okay.
Maybe a little bit more seriously. But... you grow the hair on the sides of your head, you know.
I can do that. I can just grow it real long and then flip it over.
Don't do that.
I can flip one this way.
I would like to see you try do that.
But I got to straighten it first because it's too curly.
Don't do it. Don't waste your time on that.
All right, folks, that does it for this moment with Al Franken. Follow him on that platform known as Twitter, X, whatever it is, because it
I have the or the Al Franken podcast.
I was gonna get to that. Yes, the Al Franken podcast. Definitely check that out. I look forward to my invitation to coming on and getting grilled by one host, Al Franken.
Oof. Boy, that put a lot of pressure on me. You know, you really should have done that off camera. But okay.
Okay. Well,
for David.
Well, just have your people talk to my people and we'll work it out, right?
Person talk to your people.
But you're a former senator, so you got people. You got people stashed in corners.
I got people.
You got people all over. But you can follow Al on Twitter as long as, I mean, Twitter.
Al Franken podcast, which you're going to be on in the future.
The Al Franken podcast. Twitter. So
and don't
screw
mention
Twitter. Go follow the Al Franken podcast.
There you go.
There we go.
Now you'll be on sooner.
Yes. So I'll be on sooner. Great. And we appreciate Al coming on. We appreciate you taking time to drop in and listen, do the download thing, because you know it gives me all the goosebump feelings that I love to get when you download. So download a lot. That makes me feel yummy inside. And until next time, be safe, be well. Summer's over. Fall is here. That means you can start wearing tight shirts again.
Is it just me, or have we all lost our minds? It's a question more and more people are asking themselves, afraid to admit they already know the answer. It's also a podcast, one about people coming together in a time of division and uncertainty to talk about culture and politics, compromise and connections. It's about challenging the norms we've come to accept as a society and working together to find common ground. Fierce and Unfiltered. Host Jennifer Horn is a former Republican strategist and party leader turned independent sanity activist. One way or another, we've all lost our minds. Join Jennifer Horn in the search to find them again.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.